It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan Gervie & Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality and television host, Kerry Kasem. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Kerry Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles. And everyone listening all over the world on KABC.com. I am Alan Gervie, and I'm the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan Gervie and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. And I'm here with Kerry Kasem. And Kerry, I think I'm going to help you manage your life because you've had like the worst week of your life.
I have. My 20-year-old cat, Kitty, the love of my life, he was everything to me, passed away. And I've never had anything like this horrible. And people said, well, you know, my father died and my grandma died. And it's not, I was prepared because they were sick for so long. You kind of mentally prepare yourself. I was not mentally prepared for this one. This one hit me like I was shot.
Wow. I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you. Thank you.
You just look
horrible.
Like you've been through a lot
the
this
ringer.
Week. The ringer.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to say because, you know, I know how you love your animals, and specifically, I mean, you've had her for a long time.
Him, yeah, 20 years. Him. 20 years. I mean, honestly, can anybody say, very rare, there are some people who said I can. Can anybody say that they could not wait every single day to see somebody every day? Like, there was never a day I wasn't excited to see my kitty. Not one day. It's crazy. I've never had that relationship with a guy or my family.
Wait a second here. You're sitting beside your boyfriend. You're saying that? That's not very nice.
It's true.
Oh my
it's
God.
True. I mean, come on, 20 years? Can you say that about your wife?
It's been a really tough week for you. Sometimes you look forward to seeing your family every day.
Especially the furry ones.
Children. I mean, I have two, you know, as you know, and every day, not only do I look forward to seeing my wife, but I also, the hugs from my kids mean more to me than anything. And, you know, there's a lot of tough things that go on at work. There's a lot of tough things that go on in this world. But when you can hug your family, your children, your wife, your husband, whoever it may be, it puts everything in perspective. So, you know, I'd like to give you a big hug because maybe that will help. We're far apart here because there's
some screens
paraphernalia in front of us, but maybe Nico can give you a hug.
His pipe.
His what?
You said paraphernalia.
Well, that's what it is. I don't think that way. There is a lot going on, and today we're going to have an opportunity to talk about what is really a hot topic, obviously, Brett Kavanaugh hearings and the accusations. I know you have some strong comments. We're going to talk after the break to Michael Tomasky, and he is a columnist, commentator, political commentator, journalist, very, very well read, and he has written about this topic for weeks now, has a lot to say. He's prolific, and we're going to get his perspective, interesting stuff he's written. I know, Kerry, you've been preoccupied, so maybe you haven't really focused on what's been going on in the world.
Oh, no. This last few days, yes, you're right. But do I prepare for the shows? Always. So I have read and seen everything on this, and I am definitely prepared to give my opinion, and I do have strong commentary. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it. You know, we haven't seen each other for a little while.
Yeah.
And you missed a great event. We had Robert Shapiro on the show a couple weeks ago, and then I went to the foundation, Foundation.
I saw you there with all the celebrities and on the red carpet.
I was on the red carpet.
It was awesome.
And a number of our guests were there who had been on the show before. Of course, Gloria Allred. It was nice to see Gloria there, and Patty Glaser, a number of other people. Larry King was there, and I saw my old friend Mario Lopez,
yeah,
which was
you
nice.
You guys were right there in the picture. I thought I saw him in your red carpet picture.
I don't know if he was in my red carpet.
I thought
carpet,
he was like to the side. I thought I saw him.
Quite possibly. I didn't look, but I did talk to him. He had torn Achilles tendon, so he was hobbling around, and, you know, we go back to the Saved by the Bell days,
yeah.
So that was nice, but there were a lot of people there. Unfortunately, you weren't, and David Lee Roth sang.
I was a keynote speaker at a conference, and oh yeah, he's older now.
Oh, he looks awful.
But oh no,
terrible, terrible.
Oh,
I don't know. You rock and roll people. I mean, I know you're a rocker.
I just saw him a couple years ago.
Oh man,
we danced together.
Aging is horrible.
I interviewed him, and we literally danced together. It was so funny.
Yeah.
We had a blast. He didn't look that bad. He looked pretty good.
I don't know. Maybe he's looking.
Maybe he had a hard night. Maybe his cat died.
No, it's just, oh God, don't age, Carrie.
Oh, it's not happening. Botox, not fillers, lasers.
It will
lasers.
Never happen to you. No.
Stem cell treatments, hey?
Stem cell treatments. That's not what he looks like. He had no had no hair.
No, that's what?
Debbie's showing us.
He had no hair?
Well, he had, just let's leave it alone. I'm not here to criticize and to make
yes,
light of a former rocker, you know, who just jumping around the stage like an old man. It's embarrassing. At least when I'm a lawyer, I can go into court. I don't care how old I am. And, you know, but why are you trying to be a child?
Because that's what he did for his life. If somebody somebody told you, like, when you got into your, let's say, 80s, you know, this is for young people. Get out of here. Get out of the courtroom. You look ridiculous.
I would leave. I would. I mean, there's a time and place for everything.
You would not. I think you would say there would be some preferred, like, explicatives. How do you say that? How do you say that word? I don't want to say the F word. Okay, so F word and the S word. And I think you would go after them pretty harshly.
I would not. Lots. No, I would say thank you for bringing that to my attention. And it's time for me to ride off into the sunset. And that's what I would say to David Lee Roth.
Like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
So we're going to take a quick break. Before we do, though, you know, I do want to catch up just for a brief moment on where you've been, what you've been doing. You were traveling.
Yes.
I missed you. You weren't at the any of the events that have gone on. So
I was in, I've been filming, you know, 48 Hours came and filmed us. And they have this show, and then they have been, you know, shooting my family and different family members. And so I went to a Washington conference where they were supposed to shoot there too, but they're going to do the Chicago conference in a week or two instead. So they're still shooting.
They are doing a lot of work the episode, the 48 Hours episode that'll take place later on in the fall.
Yes, they're doing a lot. Way more than I thought that they would. They are going all over the country.
Does my energy sound a little low
you
today?
I asked you if you were okay when I first walked in. What happened? Come on, spill it.
Nothing. Buzz. Tired.
What, really?
But do I sound really bad? Maybe our listeners should call in and say you suck.
No, you sound terrible. You actually have to say it's kind of nice. You're mellow.
I'm doing FM today. No, no more AM. I'm doing the old FM.
It's like NPR.
I'm going to take, maybe I shouldn't do some shots. I don't know what to do because I don't know how to get myself up. I have so much adrenaline that I don't really need to take anything. But between this segment, maybe during the break.
I'll give you some coffee.
I don't drink coffee. I've never tasted coffee in my life.
Well, that's what will help you.
But I'm not going to do it.
Well, then you asked me what could help. This is what helps me.
You can't motivate me?
We could do some jumping jacks. We'll do some jumping jacks.
Yeah, right. That's not going to happen. All right. Well, we're going to talk to Michael Tomasky after the break. We're going to talk about Brett Kavanaugh, everything Brett Kavanaugh today, as if you haven't heard it. I mean, it's been all over the airwaves. We're just going to do, you know, beat a dead horse, I guess. This is terrible. Man, I'm negative.
You are in a mood.
It was a rough day. It was tough.
I mean, sorry to hear.
It's all right. You have good days. I appreciate bad days because then I know that I can appreciate the good days. If all my days were good, I'd be so depressed.
I mean, I understand what you're saying. You have to have a rough day to understand and appreciate the good ones. But one rough day is great. And then you can make the rest of my days good. And I'd appreciate it.
You know what someone once said about me? They described my life as the guy who isn't happy if he isn't happy. So we're going to take a... Ken Kokin did. Producer of The Usual Suspects.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break. You're listening to Gurfy's Law, and hopefully you'll still be listening after the break. No. We're right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
The national debt is now over $20 trillion. What happens next? Rising inflation drops into the dollar's value. Some experts say another crash is coming. You can fight this, not with stocks or bonds, but with gold and silver coins in an IRA from Augusta Precious Metals. Call 855-858-5807 and learn how an IRA backed by physical gold and silver can hedge against inflation. Call Augusta Precious Metals right now at 855-858-5807 and get a free gold IRA guide. Call 855-858-5807.
Have you tried that trendy new dating app? You can have months of frivolous fun with people who just love to play games. But if you're ready for something more grown up, try the Match app. Over 30,000 new people a day are heading to Match for grown-up conversations that lead to great dates and beyond. Our listeners that go to Match.com can start for free today. View photos and informative profiles to get a deeper sense of the people you'd like to meet. Start for free today at Match.com. That's Match.com.
Ricky always wanted to play baseball in the majors. He was playing catch before he could walk, practically lived in the batting cages. He was behind home plate more than he was home. And one day, after all that hard work, he found himself walking into a Major League Baseball stadium after buying a ticket at the front gate. A nosebleed seat obscured by a pole, but he was in there. No, Ricky never did play in the big leagues, but he did switch his car insurance to Geico, proud partner of Major League Baseball, which saved him a lot. So, all in all, things were good.
Go, oh, oh, oh. O'Reilly.
Eventually, it's going to happen. You'll turn the key and your engine won't start. Don't lose your ability to get around. Visit O'Reilly Auto Parts for a superstart battery. Whether it's a reliable economy, hardworking premium, or powerful extreme, you'll find it at an everyday low price. Don't let a dead battery slow you down. Visit O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
The glass is always half full when you're listening to Gurvey's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, that glass is half full. I don't know if it's half full or half empty for Brett Kavanaugh, but we're going to talk about that. And we have an authority to talk about the would-be, maybe, Justice of the Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh. We have Michael Tomasky, who we're going to speak to, who is a columnist, commentator, journalist, author. He does everything. He's prolific. He hasn't stopped writing about this. He just keeps coming and coming, and he's got it from all different angles. He's the editor-in-chief of Democracy. He's a correspondent for Newsweek, Daily Beast, contributing editor for the American Prospect, contributor, New York Review of Books, and just about everything else. He's appeared in New York Times Book Review, Washington Post, Harper's Weekly, and I'm running out of breath, so I'm not going to say the number of other outlets that he has been seen and written in. And he comes on the show naturally, as his father was a trial lawyer. So he certainly is welcome to Gurvey's Law. Michael, welcome.
Well, thanks. Thanks for all that. Yeah. But I'm not a lawyer. I'll do my best, though.
That's okay. You know, your writings, you could be a lawyer. It's really something when someone who is not a lawyer is able to bring out the fine legal points. But I have to read something about your writing. This is September 10th. And I'm not going to say who wrote it. You actually wrote it, but I'm not going to tell anyone who wrote it.
Okay.
Unless lightning strikes, Mr. Kavanaugh will be confirmed to the court sometime in the next few weeks and will take his seat before the court's next session starts in October. That was September 10th by Michael Tomasky. So, Michael, has lightning struck?
Yeah, it sure has. Now, how severe a bolt of lightning, you know, did it, was it strong enough to take down the house? I guess we're going to find that out next week. It's a totally different world than when I wrote that column, when everything seemed closed. And, you know, it's interesting. I've been reading about what happened in the Anita Hill hearings in 1991, and that, too, was really late in the game. That should tell us something. That should tell us that women watch these things, and you know, for understandable reasons, I believe, they go back and forth in their minds about whether they're ready to come forward and say these things and endure this spotlight, and you know, in these days receive death threats. I suppose Anita Hill probably did too. So it's a big decision for these women to make. So the fact that both of these things happened in the ninth inning is no coincidence, I think.
But Michael, let me just ask you this. Why are you talking about substance? Isn't this about politics? I'll tell you, I heard this week Mark Levin was talking about how dare, and I'm going to do my best, Mark Levin, how dare... How dare the liberals? How dare they come up with this at the last minute? But what about Merrick Garland? I mean, isn't this all politics, regardless of whether you're Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative? Isn't it any way you, whatever you can do to keep who you want off the court, off the court?
Right, and to put whoever you want on the court, on the court.
Be careful about what you say, because you wrote about the democracy, the system, and if Trump was elected, which he was, and he's still in office, then he has a right to appoint who he thinks should be on the Supreme Court. And if the elections don't change that, and if we're still haven't had had a vote on Kavanaugh, then maybe that's what, you know, the people have spoken.
Well, unfortunately, from my perspective, you know, the people spoke in 2016, and even though he lost the popular vote, he won under the rules, and so, you know, he gets to appoint the person. You know, I wrote one of the columns that you quoted from went on to criticize the Democratic Party, the Clinton campaign, and just the liberal pressure groups in general for not doing enough and saying enough in 2016 to impress upon people, look, folks, you don't have to like Hillary Clinton. You can dislike Hillary Clinton, but you have to vote because of the Supreme Court. This is an opportunity to put a liberal majority on the Supreme Court for the first time in 30 years. Do you understand the consequences of that? Do you understand what will stem from that? That wasn't driven home on the left the way it was driven home on the right.
You know, I just have such an issue with the fact that women come out, and I'm not, if this is true, it's a horrible thing, but women come out the last second, the last hour, hey, and it really puts doubt in people's minds because they said, well, hey, wait a second. This guy's being, you know, he's going to get this nomination. He's going to be, you know, looks like he might be confirmed. And all of a sudden we have this, you know, well, he did this to me. This is what happened to me. It doesn't carry enough weight. Why didn't this woman come out beforehand? Why now?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, I think we'll find that out. She, as we know, she contacted her congresswoman and Senator Feinstein in late July.
Right.
We don't know about the conversations that went on between Feinstein and her. Apparently, the congresswoman, Anna Eshoo, kind of passed it off to Feinstein because it's the Senate business. It's
right.
not House business.
Well, if it's everyone's business, it's everyone's business.
Well, that's correct.
You're either a wuss or you're not. Go ahead.
Well, that's true. But, I mean, those people, like, they have such rules about decorum and whose jurisdiction is this and that. So I can understand why Anna Eshoo might have done that. But anyway, we don't know what kind of conversations Christine Blasey Ford and Dianne Feinstein had over the course of the summer that led to or you know, assisted in this being delayed like this. from the perspective of the forces of the opposition to Kavanaugh, it would have been better if she'd come out sooner. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
But, you know, I think we're still seeing in polls, I mean, you know, that you know, there's plenty of belief in what she's saying, or plenty of people who think that she, you know, that this probably happened. I mean, there was one poll that slightly favored Kavanaugh today, and there was another poll that slightly favored her.
Right.
You know, in her letter, she concludes by saying, "It is upsetting to discuss sexual assault and its repercussions, yet I felt guilty and compelled as a citizen about the idea of not saying anything." So, taken in a vacuum, that really is important, and I think it's well said. However, when we're talking about 30 years, whatever side of the fence you're on the political issue, you've got to wonder why she didn't feel guilty and compelled as a citizen to bring this up at any point. I mean, let's face it, Justice Kavanaugh, he was on the Court of Appeal. Why didn't that come out now? Then, why is it just the Supreme Court? Is it because it's sexy now, or is it because of what you said, which I think is very important, is that it will change the tenor of the court and what we can expect on a lot of social issues moving forward?
Yeah, you raise a fair question, and she's no doubt going to be asked that question by Republicans if and when she testifies. I guess they now are saying that she hopes to testify next week, but not on Monday. She'll be asked that question, and she'll have to have a good answer for it. I guess my answer would be something along the lines of, well, there are a lot of circuit court judges. You know, there are 100 or so circuit court judges, and there are only 9 Supreme Court justices, and the stakes are much higher now. And, you know,
wait a second. The stakes are higher. You know, we hear, and I'm not saying on one side or the other, but the stakes are higher in sexual assault, regardless of what is involved consequentially.
Well, yes, that's yeah, absolutely. I mean that the stakes are higher in the sense that the Supreme Court sets precedent, whereas other courts don't set precedent. Right?
And I got that. So, no, I got yeah. that. But yeah. I also get that she's sounds like a Democrat to me. And
she is.
Well, she's a registered Democrat.
And by the way, Carrie,
she sounds like, and it's like, okay, well, wait a second. You've heard Democrats say, I'm not going to vote for anybody that Trump nominates. We're not going to, you know, we're going to do everything we can to block this. So, yeah. I mean, this sounds like everything you can to block this.
Well, you know, the court battles are the ground zero of polarization in American politics. If you think about the history of polarization in recent American politics, we became a polarized political culture over the course of the 1990s. Gingrich, you know, and the Clintons and the Lewinsky thing and all that stuff. And then it kind of culminated in a certain way in Bush v. Gore. But with respect to Supreme Court nominations, it happened earlier. It happened with Bork, and conservatives will always point to this, and I say as a liberal that they do have a point. This was the first, it was 1986, and it was the first time in modern history, I don't know about the entire history of the country, but it was the first time in modern history when ideology was introduced by the nominee's opponents as a legitimate subject for conversation. Now, Democrats and liberals would say in response to that, well, yes, it was the first time, but it was also the first time that a president nominated a guy who was way outside the mainstream, because throughout most of history, you know, Eisenhower nominated Earl Warren, you know, and Richard Nixon put forth Blackmun, and Kennedy put forth White, and Nixon put forth Powell. I mean, I could go down the whole list, but from the 1940s through the 1970s and into the 80s, most Supreme Court nominees were not way out there in one direction or another. There was kind of a consensus. And that's why they were always passed, you know, 98-2, and their nomination hearings lasted about an hour and a half.
Right.
Well, then that started to change. And it really changed with Bork, and I remember I was young at that time, but I remember it, and you know there was predictions, you know, that who's he going to pick, who's Reagan going to pick, they said if he chooses Bork, that's a real in your face kind of choice,
right?
And that's the choice he made, and so the Democrats made their stand, and that's where this well started to get poisoned. And it's just gotten worse and worse ever since. So the court battles are really like the raw face of our angry polarization.
But you may be putting too much focus on the legitimacy of the Supreme Court. We had Brian Leiter, a professor in Chicago, on the show not too long ago, and he talked about the Supreme Court simply being an extension of the political arm. It's just all politics. Forget about judicial review. Forget about interpretation of the Constitution or any of the buzzwords that you're going to hear and you hear throughout these hearings. The fact of the matter is it's simple, that the nominees are political appointments, and that's it. And whatever happens on the court, you can expect will go that way. Now, I think that's a little bit harsh and maybe a little cynical, but do you think maybe you're thinking too hard on this and Brian Leiter has the right idea, saying, why are you thinking so much when it really is political? That's it. It's not justice.
I don't know that I disagree with him very much, but I would just say this. I mean, through that period of American history, that post-war period, when there was a lot of overlap between the two parties, there were conservative Democrats, there were liberal Republicans. The parties weren't as split as they are today into two such warring camps. There was a kind of idea that Supreme Court justices weren't very political. Now, conservatives will probably say, well, you know, what are you talking about? You know, I mean, those Warren Court decisions, they were very political. Well, no, they were grounded in a reading of the Constitution that was a different reading of the Constitution than conservatives preferred, but they were grounded in a reading of the Constitution. And then the conservatives mounted a counteroffensive. Sometime in the 1970s, they, you know, got a lot of rich people to give them millions of dollars so they could build their institutions and their think tanks to counter the Democratic ones. And they developed this idea called originalism or strict constructionism,
right,
that was supposed to counter the kind of interpretations, the so-called living constitution interpretations of the Warren Court and people like Blackmun and Brennan, who were some of the most liberal justices of the 60s and 70s. And so that's where we got into this war. You know, in other words, in the 60s and 70s, at the time of the Warren Court, there was only one side fighting.
Right.
Then the conservatives said, we better get our boxing gloves on.
Well,
and
they did.
And that's where we are.
You know, we have to take a quick break. I want to change the subject a little bit because let's talk about the substance. I think you may be right on the political issue, but let's pretend there isn't a political issue. You wrote, and I don't want you to comment on this now, it's just a teaser, Brett Kavanaugh's lying to get on the Supreme Court. I want to talk about that. And also I know Kerry wants to talk about the substance of Christine Ford's allegations and talking about what really happened 30 years ago and whether a drunk 17-year-old should be held responsible and whether or not he should be on the highest court in the land.
And nobody mentioned Ayn or Ayn Rand's objectivism. How about that one? We've mentioned everything else.
You'll ask Michael about
everything else.
We need to take a break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan, Gervie & Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan, Gervie & Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Capri Deli has been serving up great sandwiches since 1954. Come on down for their homemade meatballs, sausages, and beef, roasted in-house. All Capri Deli sandwiches are made to order, thick and meaty, with everything sliced fresh daily.
The great thing about Capri Deli is the people who keep coming back from all over Southern California, week in and week out, and have been for many, many years. This is a great testament to the DiMaggio family, who use the same family recipes passed down from generation to generation. Our customers and our extended family, this is tradition. Come join us. Capri Deli is located at 713 East San Bernardino Road in Covina and is a must-stop attraction for anyone in the LA area.
Celebrating 60 years of great sandwiches, pastrami dips, lasagna, and handmade pizza. Let Capri Deli cater your event. Capri Deli in Covina on San Bernardino Road or online at CapriDeliCovina.com. That's CapriDeliCovina.com. People love their food.
Talk Radio 790, KABC News Update. I'm Steve Cummings. Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, the woman accusing Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh of sexual assault, is accepting the Senate Judiciary Committee's request to testify, including a specific date and time. Ford had initially requested to testify on Thursday, but Judiciary Chairman Chuck Grassley remains firmly committed to a Wednesday hearing. The woman accused of stabbing several children at an unlicensed daycare center in Queens is facing five counts of attempted murder. 52-year-old Yufeng Wang is accused of stabbing three infants and two adults yesterday, sending them to the hospital in critical condition. When police arrived, she was unconscious with cuts to her wrists, and a butcher knife and meat cleaver were recovered from the scene. The victims and Wang are recovering. All are in stable condition. KABC SoCal weather, sunny this afternoon with highs in the mid to upper 70s at the beaches to the mid 80s inland. More news coming up in 30 minutes and continuing coverage is at KABC.com. I'm Steve Cumming, Talk Radio 790, KABC News.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, giving you a new perspective to enrich your life. Now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Yeah, you are listening to Gervie's Law. I'm Alan Gervie. I'm here with Carrie Kasem, and we're talking to Michael Tomasky. He is a commentator, I'd say a political commentator, but also a journalist. I don't even know, Michael, if we can call journalists anymore. And I don't mean to offend you, but you know, it's funny because I was looking at some of the things, and if I look on CNN or if I look on Fox, I know exactly the perspective I'm going to see. I don't know that I'm going to learn anything other than a political perspective. How do you deal with it? Because I think I know your opinions, and I'm not trying to take them away from you, but at the same time, you are labeled a journalist. So, you know, back in the day when you were at NYU, I think it might have had a different meaning than it does now.
Well, it probably did. But, you know, there always has been a division of labor between opinion journalists and straight news reporters. And I've been both, but I've been an opinion journalist for a long, long, long time. And, everything I write is labeled opinion. I laugh sometimes when conservatives criticize me, send me nasty tweets saying that, you know, you're obviously not an objective journalist. Well, no, I'm not. I'm not advertised as that. I'm not supposed to be that. They don't
tell
me
something you don't know. But I think it's important that the proper research, there are a lot of people out there, and I'm sure it bothers you when you have people with opinions who certainly are on one side or the other, but they really don't have a whole lot of substance behind them. I know through your career, you've written a number of books, and we're going to talk about a new book coming out in February a little bit later in the show. But you know, it's interesting when you say people get upset with you. Did anyone get upset when you wrote Brett Kavanaugh's lying to get on the Supreme Court?
Well, a couple of people came onto my Facebook page and expressed some concerns. but I don't know. No, by and large, people didn't. But I wasn't the only person to say that.
No, I want to know what he's lying about, though. What you think?
Well, there were five specific things, and I'm not sure I can remember all five of them in this particular moment. But
yeah, well, I have them in front of me.
Okay, let's hear it. I want to hear it.
But well, no, you don't have to tell all of them. But go ahead.
The main one had to do with the extent to which he was aware. Alan, you have it in front of you.
Go ahead.
Well, you talked about the documents stolen by a Republican operative,
yes,
Manuel Miranda, from the Senate
Manuel Miranda
Committee.
Business, yes. And, right, right. And, so documents were stolen from the Senate Judiciary Committee, Democratic staffers, and he said he never saw them. And the questioning from a couple of senators and some articles in Slate magazine by a woman who was a staffer then named Lisa Graves cast very serious doubt, very, very serious doubt on his denials. That was the main one. That's where he really just seemed to be caught red-handed. There was also something about whether he had a role in developing torture policy in the Bush administration. There were also his role in a couple of judicial nominations in the Bush administration. And there was one other thing.
One of the things you talked about was about his work with Ken Starr, who has been on our program. We had an hour with Ken Starr, which was
we did.
It was interesting. We crossed over all his career, and I don't know if he was truthful or not, but he certainly answered all the questions. And I think it was a little embarrassing because, you know, when you start talking about the Baylor investigations and everything and his role in not controlling what he should have, you know, he didn't have much to say about that. But let's talk about what, you know, you make a point that Justice Kavanaugh may be one of the most political attorneys that you've ever seen, and it can be evidenced by looking at his work with Ken Starr leaking information, being a political lawyer. Maybe that's enough for the Senate, the Congress to be talking about versus the sexual harassment and abuse allegations from 30 years ago.
I wish that were true, but unfortunately I don't think that's true, because that's just going to fall down strictly along partisan lines. And, you know, Republicans might have private thoughts to the contrary, but publicly they are not going to criticize Kavanaugh for his behavior as one of Starr's prosecutors. For your listeners' information, in case they don't know, he did a lot of things for Ken Starr in the 1990s investigating Bill Clinton. He was put in charge of the investigation of Vince Foster's death, which had already been declared three times to be a suicide by a depressed man. And Kavanaugh reopened the case at Starr's urging and led an investigation that was, you know, very distasteful, taking carpet samples from the White House, questioning Foster's daughters, taking hair samples from Foster's daughters. Alan, in a more just world, that would offend more people, but that's just going to be a strictly partisan thing.
Okay, Carrie, let's talk about what offends people, apparently. Let's talk about what happened with Christine Blasey Ford.
Yes.
And whether or not that amounts to enough to defeat the nomination.
You know, here's my thing. Ford is asking the FBI to pull out, you know, its microscope, do some digging, do an investigation. And then the lawyer sends a letter to the committee chairman saying, you know, we don't want Ford paraded in front of the public. We, you know, she shouldn't have to do this. She just came out with it. Don't write a letter talking about this, knowing it's going to go public, if you don't want to come out and talk about it. First of all, not okay. Second of all, if the FBI is going to be called in, they need to investigate both people. Is she a liar? Is she, you know, does she have a history of this? What is her history with guys? Yeah. What? So it needs to be both. And unless you're prepared to come out and talk and be public and put a face to your name and defend it, don't come out at all. Stay out of the public eye.
Yeah, that's a completely fair thing to say. I can have some sympathy for, plenty of sympathy, actually, for the, you know, deliberations, the torturous deliberations that she might be going through. She's a citizen. She's obviously a concerned citizen. She's not somebody who sits around and watches soap operas and sports. She's a concerned citizen.
And a country. Professor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a professor and a learned person. And
people might argue about that, but go ahead. As a professor, I mean, you're not talking about her in particular, but
okay, whatever.
We assume that professors are learned people.
And, you know, she has convictions, and yet she also has concern for her family, her children, and herself, and she knows that she's going to get death threats and all that kind of thing. So I can understand her being really torn about that.
But do you believe, Michael?
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Ask a question.
No, you finish your thought. Then I'll remember. I got a good memory here.
Oh yeah. Okay. Well, just very quickly. I mean, I can understand her being torn about that, but I agree when it really comes down to it, Carrie. If you're going to write that letter, you got to follow through on it. Mm,
yes.
But do you believe that maybe there are some dramatic impulses here? When we talk about someone who, I guess it was in 2012, through some therapy, realized that this experience that she had, whether it occurred or not, let's assume it did, of course, even though Mark Judge, the guy who was supposed to be with Kavanaugh, says it didn't, but let's assume it did. Do you believe that this really did ruin her life to the degree, as she said in the past, that Mr. Kavanaugh should be removed from the highest court in the land?
I can't say. I mean, you know, I'm a man. This kind of thing hasn't happened to me. I've not done this kind of thing to a woman. I don't have any experience with this kind of situation. So I can't answer the question on those terms. I think I can answer it on these terms. There are only 9 members of the United States Supreme Court. If in a country of 320 million people, we can't find 9 people above reproach, we're in trouble.
Well, that's a good answer.
There you go.
But, you know, again, when we mix the political issue in there, there's other elements that are playing a role. And I'm not here to pass any judgment. But, you know, when we talk about Mark Judge, and he, Carrie, is the guy who was supposedly there, and he's denied that this occurred. But I think he wrote something, said wasted tales of a Gen X drunk. And he talked about the drinking. He talked about the carrying on in the private school when they were 17 or 18, 16, 17. And I'm not saying that, you know, we should pass judgment on that or not. But is he the best naysayer for Mr. Kavanaugh?
Well, not at all. And that's why, you know, he didn't want to testify and the Republicans didn't want him to testify. I mean, this is another thing that makes me lean in her direction. Kavanaugh doesn't want an FBI investigation. Judge doesn't want an FBI investigation and doesn't want to testify. The Republicans in the Senate and the White House don't want an FBI investigation and don't want Judge to testify and don't want Kavanaugh actually to have to testify under oath. But she's willing to testify under oath. What does that suggest to you?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that she can do a good job. And I think the Republicans are probably wrong in encouraging the testimony from her because she sounds, like you said, an intelligent person. I'm sure she'll be emotional. And regardless of what really did happen, I listen to testimony all day long in trials and depositions. And someone can really convince someone, regardless of what the facts really are, especially if 30 years have gone by, of something that happened through testimony.
30 years ago, 17 years old, all probably drunk at a party. I'm sorry. There's going to have to be a little more proof than he said, she said. Has to be.
Oh, there is. Yeah, yeah. She's going to need a witness.
Yeah.
I remember you mentioned my dear beloved father. I remember what my dad always used to say to me when I would ask him about trials that we saw on TV. And I wanted him to say something one direction or the other. And he'd always say, Michael, I'm not in the courtroom. I'm not going to say.
Oh, wow.
You know what? That is brilliant, and that's something that I've lived by. I've been doing the show for 5 years now, and so many people, we've had so many guests on regarding trials and evidence and, you know, some of the greatest lawyers in our country, and I've always subscribed to the same theory that your dad did, and that is, you know, I'm not willing to give you an opinion because I wasn't in the courtroom, I don't know all the evidence, and I'm not smart enough to be able to provide a legitimate, valid, cogent opinion without seeing all of the evidence. On that note, we have to take a break. I want to talk a little bit more about your article about Dianne Feinstein. Why not? We're here in California. How did she handle this? And what the heck? Why is an 85-year-old still running for office?
That is one thing I have to say. That's awesome. I hope I'm still like running something at 85.
I'm kidding. I know, you know, we had Brad Sherman on our show not too long ago, who is, a congressman. And he was like, I hope she does. He didn't say this off the air. I think he said, I hope she doesn't want. Adam Schiff and Sherman, they both want, they want her seat. And why not, right? All right, we got to take a break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Have you tried that trendy new dating app? You can have months of frivolous fun with people who just love to play games. But if you're ready for something more grown-up, try the Match app. Over 30,000 new people a day are heading to Match for grown-up conversations that lead to great dates and beyond. Our listeners that go to match.com/mix will get 7 days free. 7 days to view photos and informative profiles to get a deeper sense of the people you'd like to meet. This free offer is only at match.com/mix. That's match.com/mix.
Results may vary. Not a solicitation for legal services. If you owe the IRS back taxes, payroll taxes, or have not filed your returns, the IRS will get you. They can take your property, take you to court, even put you in jail. With one call to WALL, you'll never need to talk to the IRS again. Our average client settles for about 10% of what is owed. We offer free face-to-face consultations in your local area. Call 800-727-0433. That's 800-727-0433.
You've heard of Murphy's Law, but have you heard of Gervey's Law? Anything that can go wrong can be made right. Now, here are your hosts, Carrie Kasem and Alan Gervey.
Yeah, we're back. We've got one more segment. We are talking to Michael Tomasky. Just writes a lot. Prolific for the Daily Beast, correspondent for Newsweek, New York Review of Books, and he's got a book coming out, and we want to talk about that before we're done today. Before the break... Well, there's a couple things. I mentioned Dianne Feinstein before the break, and I want to ask Michael whether she did the right thing or not. Carrie, stop waving at the camera.
I'm sorry, we're being filmed right now.
You're getting filmed, so she's waving at the camera. She could care less. But you were really upset with my reference. By the way, I met with Gavin Newsom last week. You weren't there.
Are you going to the other one?
It's this weekend. Mike Gatto, who's a friend of the show, who will probably be the next lieutenant governor of this state, California.
Oh, wait, you think Gatto will?
Yeah, he will.
I hope he will.
Yeah,
he carried my bill.
2020. I know.
He carried my bill and got it passed.
Yeah, so he's having an event for Gavin Newsom this weekend. Unfortunately, I have to go to the Sound of Music with my family.
Unfortunately, I'll take the tickets.
At the Hollywood Bowl.
You go to the Newsom thing.
Maybe I'll do it, but I actually had a chance to talk to Gavin. I mentioned Adam Schiff. You are upset with Adam Schiff because he wouldn't do anything for your bill.
Not a fan. I'm in Washington, D.C. You know, I'm getting tons of meeting with congressmen and congresswomen. And here's Adam Schiff from California. I have a wonderful bill that curbs elder abuse, and you know, I'm getting meetings left and right. But no, Adam Schiff gave us the runaround and then decided, well, he wasn't going to meet with me, he could meet with my aide, which happens a lot. But this is a guy from my hometown here. He's California. Right. And so, yeah, I'm not right now, I'm not a fan. I don't know why and I don't know what's up with that, except that he had a meeting with a woman I have a restraining order on.
Nice.
That's the only thing I can think of that maybe changed his mind.
Now, Dianne Feinstein.
Sorry, it's my story.
What should she have done when she heard about this letter?
She should have taken a Sharpie, crossed out the woman's name.
Right. We call it redacting in the legal vernacular.
Yes.
And then immediately shared it with her colleagues.
Absolutely.
Democratic colleagues on the Judiciary Committee so that they could strategize about what to do and talk it through. And she could get others' input and, not decide on her own. I mean, this was the equivalent of a lawyer, Alan.
Yes.
To me, you tell me if I'm wrong. I think it's maybe not the legal equivalent, but the moral equivalent of a lawyer withholding evidence from co-counsel.
I absolutely agree with you. I think that it's incumbent upon us to do the right thing, regardless of the situation, especially when it has such a huge impact. And it became an issue in and of itself when it didn't need to. You know, when I'm dealing with lawyers, if something is withheld, all of a sudden we're having hearings and discovery on whether or not something should have been revealed, and we forget about the substance. And I think it's been a diversion, which certainly should not have occurred. So I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And, you know, you can tell. I mean, we don't know exactly, at least I don't know exactly, a handful of reporters in Washington know. I don't know exactly how it leaked out, but from everything I've read and been told, it seems that her colleagues, one or more of her Democratic colleagues on the committee, learned about this letter.
Yeah.
And then started asking her about it. Well, how'd they learn about it? Undoubtedly, because somebody on her staff was frustrated with the way she had handled it.
Well, you know, they
that's
should.
The only way to learn, right?
Probably, I'm sure. Yeah. But, you know, interestingly enough, they should have talked to perhaps the New York Times to find out how you do protect protect the identity.
Your sources.
The sources and the identity of an op-ed. So apparently the New York Times is doing a much better job than the folks around Dianne Feinstein.
Good point.
So before we let you go, a couple things. First of all, really quickly, and this is real complex, heavy-duty stuff. You wrote an article about what the Kavanaugh accusations mean for red state Democrats. And it's a really a scholarly piece going through a number of different individuals and how they may vote on Kavanaugh. I think it's almost moot right now because we have to get more information. Taking what your father talked about, you know, we don't have all the evidence yet on the accusations from Ms. Ford. So perhaps it's too early to tell, but briefly tell us what you think. All things being equal, without any bombshell, why or why not he will be confirmed given the red state Democrat issues for the upcoming election?
Yeah, first, let me just say quickly, I wrote that piece, which appeared in the New York Times a couple of days ago, in response to the following. I was watching cable news and seeing a lot of people say, and reading newspaper articles where people were saying, well, now these red state Democrats, Joe Manchin of West Virginia, Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, and Joe Donnelly of Indiana, chief among them, have all the reason they need to vote against Kavanaugh because of the existence of these allegations. And I watched person after person say that, and I thought, I'm from West Virginia. I know a little bit about that state. The allegations aren't enough. If they're true, yes, that's enough. But allegations aren't enough in a state where Donald Trump's approval rating is still 57%. So I wrote a column. The column is about that, about those three Democrats and the calculations that they have to make and the scenarios they may face. And I know that Democrats listening in California and, you know, other places like that, New York and Massachusetts, will say, you know, these people are sellouts and horrible.
Right.
But, you know, they have a whole different set. You know, when you're serving in a state as a Democrat where Donald Trump is 55% or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You have a lot of stuff to think about that, you know, Kamala Harris doesn't have to think about.
That's very true here in California.
And I have some sympathy for the position they find themselves in.
Yeah, actually. No, it makes a lot of sense. Just a couple more minutes quickly.
Yeah.
What is your best prediction? Look into your crystal ball, and I know it's not fair as a lawyer saying you need to render an opinion without the evidence, but does he get confirmed?
It all hinges on how she performs at her thing. I mean, I think if she's...
And it will be a performance.
Yeah, and it will be, but I think if she's compelling and she seems like she's telling the truth and she seems like she's a credible person, then I think he's back in real trouble.
I do too.
But I would say, if you want me to put a number on it,
yeah,
62% likely that he still goes through.
Wow. I'm seeing a little lower. I don't know. Okay. I just think the Me Too revolution is going to take over.
Alan, I'll tell you why.
I could be wrong.
I'll tell you why. I think there's a lot of people now that are very upset that accusations, you know, what happened to due process? What happened to, you know, people, where's the proof first, right? The allegations are destroying people's career. And I think that people are seeing that now.
Yeah. You may be right, Carrie. Last minute here. Michael, tell us about the book that you're working on. It's supposed to come out in February, is that right?
Thank you so much for asking me about it. So it's called If We Can Keep It. That's a quote from Ben Franklin. When they finished the Constitutional Convention, a woman said, well, doctor, what kind of government have we, a monarchy or a republic? And he said, a republic if you can keep it.
Right.
So that's where the title of the book comes from. It's a history of polarization in the country, but it's not just about the last 25 years. It goes back to the founding. It goes back to talking about the way our system of government was set up. It goes back to talking about the divisions at the very beginning of the country. If you read some history, you'll see that the Jeffersonians versus the Hamiltonians, just like red versus blue America.
Yeah.
But we haven't kept it. We haven't kept it.
We're in a very perilous state right now.
So we need to go back to it.
It goes through all of American history, talking about, you know, our cultural divisions, our economic divisions, our social divisions, and then it concludes with a chapter on how I hope in time, you know, not in 2 years, but in 20 years, we might be able to fix this situation.
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to that. Maybe you can come back on the show when it's coming out so we can talk a little bit more about it.
I'd love to. I've enjoyed this. Thank you.
This
All right,
great.
Well, it's great having you. He is at M. Tomasky, at M-T-O-M-A-S-K-Y on Twitter, and you can find him on the Daily Beast and a number of other publications. Michael Tomasky, thanks very much for being on Gervie's Law today.
Thank you both. Enjoyed it.
All right, well, that's going to do it for our show for the week. Thanks for listening. We're going to be here same time, same channel next week.
Yeah, you forgot the bats. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Oh, same bat
channel. I forgot you're Canadian.
Oh, I'm just glad to see you laughing, Carrie.
No, it's nice.
It's a tough week for you and you're laughing. All right. Well, thanks for listening.